Hello. Quote, "If one is to believe in peaceful coexistence, the first messengers of that peace will be children's books," end of quote. So wrote Yella Luttman in her autobiography, encapsulating a lifelong project of bringing peace through children's books, a project that culminated in 1953 with the founding of IBBY, the International Board on Books for Young People. Luttman's interest in books for youth was consistent throughout her life. She organized an international reading room for children in her teens, translated beloved children's books into German in her 20s, and published her first original German children's book in her 30s. We know from Anna Becky's research that in the wake of Hitler's rise to power, the Jewish German Luttman sought refuge in Britain, working as a journalist in the Foreign Office for the BBC and the American Broadcasting Station in Europe. She returned to post-war Germany as a consultant for the United States Army in the re-education program for women and youth. It was there that she organized an international children's book exhibition, established the International Youth Library in Munich, organized a children's literature congress, and founded IBBY, an institution comprising 75 national sections from all over the world. With me to discuss Yella Luttman's life and work are Children's Librarian of the International Youth Library in Munich, Catherine Marriott, University of Toronto Professor of History, Kiri McDermott-Berryman, and IBBY Canada Board Member and Children's Book Author, Jared Newbold. Kiri McDermott-Berryman, in Luttman's autobiography, she outlines what she sees as three distinct phases in her early life. Can you describe these phases for us?
Sure. Her first life covers the period from her birth in 1891 in Stuttgart, Germany, until just after the end of the First World War. She was raised in a Jewish household and was encouraged to pursue education. Those who interacted with Yella spoke of her unfettered determination and willpower. These traits were certainly evident in her first life when at only 17 years old, she organized an international reading room for children of foreign workers employed at a tobacco factory. During the First World War, she married a German-American man and together they had two children. Tragically, her first life came to an end when her husband died of a heart attack. As a recent widow with two children to support, her second life is when we see Yella really develop professionally. During these years, she became the first female editor of the women's supplement in the Stuttgarter Neues Tagblatt. She wrote her first children's book, and she had one of her written works performed for children. She even followed in her father's footsteps and rose to the rank of chairperson of the German Democratic Party of Württemberg. Her third life began in the lead-up to the Second World War, when she was forced to flee Germany with her children. She ended up eventually in London and was disheartened and jobless. Despite the difficulties securing employment, she found several temporary positions, one of which was as the editor of Arthur Schnitzler's unpublished papers for Cambridge University. But it wasn't until the American Broadcasting Station in Europe hired her in a permanent role as advisor that she began feeling more fulfilled. Once the war was over, the American occupation forces in Germany asked her to return to Germany and work at re-educating German youth and women.
And that brings us back to Germany, Munich specifically, for the International Youth Book Exhibition in 1946. Can you give us a sense of Luttman's work at this time?
Yella returned to Germany in the role of associate editor of the German lifestyle magazine. Heinz Dorn, who was the editor-in-chief of the magazine, recounted a story about Yella to the Association for Jewish Refugees, where she was pushing for what later became the traveling exhibit of books for youth. In the story, Norton recalls Yella presenting her rather unconventional idea to a group of men in military uniforms who were not shy about their lack of support. When one general put her idea down, she candidly said, "General, may I ask respectfully why you got yourself an advisor on youth questions at HQ if there's no chance of carrying out a project like this?" Her response did the trick and she was granted permission so long as the books were collected free of charge. She accomplished this by writing what are referred to as doves of peace to other countries who in turn responded with children's books. In Kelly George's thesis, she reports some of the unique challenges Yella faced at the 1946 Munich Exhibition on International Children's Books. At one point, Yella was approached by an elderly woman who was accompanied by a child. The woman requested a children's book that specifically did not have any reference to the story of Hansel and Gretel. Yella thought this to be a particularly odd desire. However, the woman went on to explain that the child's parents had been killed by the Nazis in a gas chamber, and the witch's oven in the Hansel and Gretel story was too similar to the murder of the child's parents.
Yes, clearly the idiosyncratic literary needs of German children in the post-war period had not been met, and something more permanent was needed. It was in this environment that Yella Luttman started the International Youth Library in Munich, or the IYL, and I can see Catherine Marriott over there has something to say on this topic. Catherine, can you take us through the initial process of setting up the permanent library?
Indeed, books with authors, illustrators, pictures, or themes unsympathetic to the Nazi cause had been banned in Germany since Hitler's rise to power. Children's books are a treasure trove of values and spirit, essential to the growth of inquisitive, open minds. So Germany's children found themselves without books at a time that they needed them most. One child, seeing the walls of the exhibition decked out with images of Santa, simply stopped and said, "Oh, now it is peace. Yes, now it's peace." So the International Youth Library was Luttman's idea to basically extend the work of the exhibition after it had completed its route through Germany. Two representatives from the humanities arm of the Rockefeller Foundation stepped into Lettman's office one day. It was a total surprise. They had seen the exhibition in Berlin, and they were moved by the displays of books from multiple countries and as many languages. So they offered the possibility of financial help, and Lettman was invited to do a lecture tour in the USA. During her trip, Lettman visited the offices of the Rockefeller Foundation. A committee was formed at the University of Chicago to assist with the creation of the IYL. The ALA committed to sponsor the IYL, and Lettman met with Eleanor Roosevelt, which was quite a boost to the cause.
That idea of international cooperation is particularly potent in this post-war period. How did Lettman achieve so much involvement in a project benefiting the Allies' recent enemy? Did she not meet with significant resistance?
First of all, we should be clear that though there was political chaos and economic strife in post-war Germany, this was also a time when the Western world, specifically the Allied countries occupying post-war Germany, were actually working together to tackle the task of the reconstruction of Germany. Lettman herself calls this a situation unique in history in her autobiography. The memory of war and the beckoning of peace were strong motivators, and Lettman managed to call these to mind while she was navigating the bureaucracy and the judgments that sometimes threatened to derail her work. There were definitely questions, though, around why the IYL should be in Germany, but of course Lettman appealed to the American interests again in rebuilding Germany and the ability of books to give German children a chance to grow up and rebuild their own country. Clearly, Lettman's prior political and journalism experience had allowed her that unique position to make the connections in the UK and the US that put her on the path to creating the IYL. But what I think was most important to her success was Lettman's ability to understand how to work within official process while getting around it for efficiency's sake. For instance, when rooms needed restoration for the exhibition in the city of Hesse, Lettman realized that waiting for all the right paperwork to come through would mean that the exhibition would be delayed. So she went directly to those who'd be doing the work and talked them into doing the work right away, sort of on credit to the American Army.
While some of the difficulties that the International Youth Library faced were common to most Reconstruction efforts in the region, setting up a library poses some specific challenges that, as a librarian, you're uniquely positioned to explain to our listeners. Can you tell us a bit about those and how Lettman responded to them?
Well, for instance, cataloging so many books in so many different languages presented a particular challenge, so she requested assistance from the American Library Association in the form of a cataloging expert, but of course, in those days, the traveling took forever. So in the meantime, she decided to arrange the books simply according to title and language so that the cataloging work didn't have to stop. Ultimately, the expert arrived, but it was decided that her basic but functional system was good enough to be used, and it was used for many years. In addition, it was difficult to get staff. Librarians in Germany at that time were poorly trained with little knowledge of the languages that were in the books held by the library, but somehow Lettman persevered and staff was found. Another issue was the kind of library that Lettman had in mind. It was not taken seriously in Germany. There had always been the sense that it would have to bridge the gap between the reality of the post-war lives of the children and give the children hope for more in order to be that bridge to peace that Lettman could see in her mind's eye. So from the beginning, Lettman organized events and activities with her vision in mind. For example, Lettman had translated and given out thousands of copies of Ferdinand the Bull as gifts to the children visiting the exhibition. With some coaxing and by accidentally overlooking any copyright issues, oops, a local newspaper had printed the copies. She also wrote to Walt Disney himself to secure the rights to show Snow White to the children, since the book was so popular amongst the children. Seeing libraries in the U.S. cemented her vision of the IYL as a place where children could explore the world through inspiring activities, in addition to books. But since that wasn't how libraries were organized in Europe, like I said, it was not taken very seriously. But she formed books discussion groups with visiting authors anyway, along with an experimental Young People's UN that inspired a visit from UNESCO delegates. And as it turned out, her vision of the library became successful because it really was a beautiful way to encourage questioning and reflection and to bring people together instead of dividing them.
And that brings us to what is in some ways the pinnacle of Lettman's career, the founding of IBI International. Jared Newbold, can you give us an overview of the IBI Foundation? What is its mission?
The IBI Foundation is an international organization of volunteers who are committed to bringing books and children together. Our mission as an organization is to advocate and promote the dissemination of children's books with high literary and artistic standards, especially in developing countries. We work to ensure that everything being done is based on the idea that every child has the right to read quality material while at the same time promoting a unifying message of international understanding and tolerance by giving children everywhere the opportunity to have access to books, providing support and training for those involved with children and children's literature, ensuring that inspiring and stimulating researches and scholarly works are being conducted in the field of children's literature, and most importantly, we protect and uphold the rights of children, rights of the child according to the UN Convention on Children's Rights. Our organization works to help to set up or connect pre-existing groups to advocate and promote children's books. The pre-existing groups can come from countries with an already established publishing industry for children's books, or they could simply be a group of dedicated professionals doing pioneer work. ABI at an international level works to ensure that there is material for promotion, research being conducted, but also that there are various national chapters are following the policies and guidelines that are set forth by the President and Executive Committee of ABI. Each national section is given leeway in how they go about the focus of helping children. Depending on the chapter, they can choose to try and have a focus on collecting and promoting specific disabilities, issues, or cultural backgrounds. For instance, ABI Canada does its best to collect and promote works by First Nation authors. That does not mean, however, that any section will refuse a book not on their focus. They're more than happy to receive the donation.
How does an organization so reliant on book donations target groups with such idiosyncratic needs to make the best use of these resources? Can you give us an example?
That's a great question. Well, it is just a small example of the great work that is done by ABI. Just recently, they worked alongside Groundwood Books and Canadian Libraries in welcoming Syrian children. This very special initiative provided each Syrian child a welcome gift of John Arnold's wordless picture book entitled Sidewalk Flowers, a touching visual story beautifully illustrated by Sydney Smith. Along with this book, each Syrian refugee family was welcomed with a card in English, French, and Arabic, encouraging children and their families to go to the public library. But ABI has also worked in places such as Aceh province in Indonesia following the tsunami, as well as Haiti, Japan, and other places struck by disaster.
That's all the time we have for today. Thank you all very much for joining us. Thank you, Catherine Marriott, Kiri McDermott-Berryman, and Jared Newbold. Tune in next week as we talk about Canadian children's librarian Lillian H. Smith.